just one game this week, the home defeat to Wrexham. Simon thought we started well. It was better than last week. We weren't out of it at one down, but took our eyes off the ball and went two down. Christy Roadender thought all three goals came about far too easily, and we just never looked like scoring. Alexandra 6077 thought we were always going to struggle against a strong Wrexham team. He also thought the ref bottled sending off McLean too. Ben Benson thought there was baffling refereeing decisions, inconsistent and odd interpretations. They weren't better than us, they were stronger than us. Andy said the ref bottled it and ruined the game. Big game next week now. H. Robinson thought the ref got all the big decisions wrong, but it did look like we actually had a midfield. Andy thought the ref started well, but gradually gave in to Wrexham's antics. Graham Miles and Andrew Bamforth both thought he got both red card incidents wrong. Andrew adding they look superior and so they should, given the gulf in budgets. Graham thinks the team looks tired, so it's going to be tough next week. James is sick of bemoaning referees. Crap ones are the standard at this level. Captain Britain thought it was men versus boys. Crew didn't have the size, strength or experience to compete against a team with a Hollywood budget. Luke thought we were the better team first half, but they have League One quality forwards. Jonathan Ditt says once more, a big crowd at home brings a tepid performance. Thought we got more affected by the McLean incident than Wrexham. Rory thought the players looked up for it and played some nice football. That said, the lack of concentration cost us again. Encouraging signs for Colchester. Neil Hulse says we gave it our best shot against a better team, a dreadful ref. Better than last week, we can still do this. Hello, welcome back to the latest episode of the Railway Men podcast. To help us go through the defeat to Wrexham, our panel today is Alex Irani. Hello, Alex.
Hi, all.
Trevor Griffiths. Hello, Trevor.
Good day.
And Henry Lewis. Hello, Henry.
Hi, thank you for having me on again.
Not a problem. Trevor, I'm going to start with you. We'll start with the positives. Sorry, not plural, positive from Saturday. The crowd, over 9,000. I saw people online saying that's the biggest crowd that they've had in their lifetime at Crewe, which made me feel incredibly old. But it was phenomenal to see that many people there, wasn't it, yesterday or Saturday?
Phenomenal. Yes. Mark Beatles won't be too impressed. Some bloke come and sat in his seat who we'd never seen before. And there was a row, there was about four seats in front, but he was adamant he was going to sit in this seat he'd bought his ticket for, which seemed a bit novel. Yeah, it was good, but, you know, everything after that went downhill, didn't it?
Personally, I hated it. It took ages to get, by the time someone got me a half-time beer, the second half had started. Trying to get a beer in the concourse before the ground took ages as well. But it was a good turnout. It was packed to the rafters. I can't remember Gresty Road. I can't remember the last time Gresty Road was that busy. It probably wasn't even that busy for the South End playoff semi-final second leg, I wouldn't have thought.
No, it wasn't. 19th of November 2005, Stoke City.
Did we not set out Man United in the cup, or was that before when?
That would be before, I think. That was before.
No.
Yeah, it was. Played Stoke. Stoke beat us, 2005. Right.
Trevor, we don't need any more defeats to local rivals to talk about on this week's podcast. Come on. Well, I thought it was good. I'm not picking up a great reception from either yourself or Alex, Trevor. Possibly the idea of you people being knocked out of their routine was upsetting. Mark losing his seat, Alex not getting his halftime beer. Maybe that was the problem. Henry, I'll move on to you. The team sheet, Joel Tabner comes back in. That's got to be a good thing, getting ready for the playoffs. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, centre midfield has been a big talking point, hasn't it? And, you know, he's the kind of player that we need back in there. As well, the bench looks a lot stronger from the previous week against Grimsby. Kirk was back in there, Long's there, Tracy as well. But yeah, I think Tabner, I'll talk about a bit more because his position in the midfield is a bit of a strange one for me. So I was happy to see that he was back in the team, but I just think this kind of defensive role that he's playing, I'm not particularly keen on, to be honest. I just don't think it's working for him. You know, when we've got Osterfield in there as well, I think the two of them are just playing the wrong roles.
I think he wanted Habener to sort of dictate from a deeper role to get his foot on a ball to start attacks. Josh Osterfield in the past sort of 4 to 6 weeks has been allergic to passing to a teammate, which why yesterday having him in that more advanced role where he was bombing on beyond Nevitt, where he was winning the flick-ons, was sort of, I think, Lee Bell's way of accommodating for the fact he can't complete a pass.
Yeah.
I probably, not necessarily to ease himself back in, but he looked a bit rusty, didn't he, Tabana? So I think my view is I would have probably, Mattis seemed to play in a wider role. I'd have put Tabana probably in the wider role and have Mattis in the holding midfield role. Mattis is quite combative. He's more up to speed with the speed of the game, because he's obviously had more minutes under his belt. So I'd have preferred Mattis to have done that role if you were going to have one of the academy boys in there to sort of try and dictate proceedings. Because Tabata got caught a couple of times in the first half when he was slow on the ball, which nearly cost us goals. So my view was actually, if you get Mattis there, he's not going to cost you a goal. And then it eases Tabata back into the side of the more advanced role where he could potentially make you a goal, but he's not going to cost you one. That might have been the change I'd have made, but I'd have left Osterfield in the position he was. I thought he's more effective there than he is giving the ball away in his own half.
Well summed up, Alex.
We'll get on to the game then. Alex, I'll stay with you. I genuinely thought we started off quite well. I mean, the first 30 seconds, we had a shot on goal, which is unusual at the moment. And I thought we competed with them quite well for the opening stages of the game.
We did. I think the blueprint he looked at was that sort of Stockport game where he had this hybrid back three, and it was more Billington playing as a third centre half, slotting into midfield, a bit like Offord did that day. Aaron Rowe looked lively on the right hand side. Osterfield, as I just alluded to, was making those runs forward, and it worked. And I actually thought for the first 20 minutes, there's a blueprint, not necessarily just for today, but if we do get in the playoffs, it becomes competition football. So it's not a league where you need to turn up at home, you need to win your home game, take your point away from home. It's just do what you can to score more goals than the opposition over a two-game period. It seemed a blueprint for the playoffs as well, where actually you can keep it relatively tight defensively, because we look quite solid for the first 25 minutes, and then nick one at the other end on the counter-attack with a bit of quality that hopefully you can possess with the players coming back in. So it did work, and I thought there was some positive starts. Aaron Rowe looked lively. Nevitt didn't look battered and bruised like he did from minute one last week. So it just seemed all a bit fresher. Unfortunately, it went south quite quickly after that first goal where, frankly, Williams just switched off and allowed Palmer to make the run off him and just nod it home.
Yeah, I try my best not to be critical as much as I can. But Trevor, I thought yesterday the centre-back pairing of Williams and Dimitriou, it didn't impress me, if I'm quite honest with you. I think both of them are quite prone to try to jump in to get the ball ahead of the attacker. And I think when you've got two of the two doing that, it's always liable to leave us exposed, which did happen on Saturday's game.
Yeah, the first goal, Mickey's got dragged out wide with Mullen and didn't stop the cross. He was a yard off him. And then on the penalty area, you've got Zach Williams against Ollie Palmer. Now, that's a mismatch anyway. And the ball's come in and he's just got in front of him and he got his head to it. But I'm not sure Mickey should be going that far wide. You know, let your fullback deal with it. But he never got close to him. He stood in front of him, the cross came in. Goal. And if you look at all three goals, which we'll probably talk about, both of them were at fault.
I think the other thing is, sometimes you have to realise and admit that they're top quality strikers in League Two, which is probably a league that they're too good for. And they're going to make, you know, defenders like Zach, who's still kind of learning his trade, they are going to make him look amateur at times. They were a menace, those two, and although they didn't create loads in the first 25 minutes, like you said, that, you know, you were always kind of fearful that they could produce a moment that they did. And before you know it, you're one behind and chasing the game.
Just seemed avoidable. If there's a brilliant bit of quality that unlocks us, which you'd expect for them, the amount of money they're paying their players, you'd expect them to have that bit of quality. You'd be like, that's what money gets you. But the fact was, it just seemed like a cross that could have been stopped and a centre-half that hadn't switched off, you know, it just, like, you don't help yourself sometimes. Don't get me wrong, the two finishes from Mullin and Palmer were clinical. They, you know, they got in there, they knew what they were doing and stuck it in the back of the net. But it didn't feel like we made it hard enough for them to do that. And I think that's the frustration. I think there's one thing I mentioned about this Billington hybrid role, a bit like Offord. I think Bell got lured into a false sense of security at Accrington, where Dimitri and Williams both played well as a back four pairing. Accrington were god awful. They were one of the worst sides I've seen this season. And I don't know whether that lured him into it to say, well, actually, we can get away with that. We can push Billington into midfield, and I'm fine with them as a two and a four when Billow pushes up. I wonder whether he should have just tweaked it slightly and have Williams go into that midfield role, which what Billington did, because Billington isn't one that he's more of a conservative defender. As you've said, Stu, that the two of them want to go win the ball. Billow's happy to sweep up behind it. So if you actually had Williams going more advanced, trying to win it in midfield, he's good enough to carry the ball, as we saw against Morecambe, where he was instrumental in the goal. He's good enough on the ball. He can potentially do that hybrid role. And then it allows you to have Billington as the person that can sort of sweep up and allow Dimitri to go and win headers and be that more dominant centre-off. So I wonder if Bell had his time again, he'd go with the same concept and maybe just tweak the delivery of it.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well, if you were to do that, would be the obvious advantage of not having two left-footed centre-backs playing as a two centre-backs together. Because Williams, the further away he gets from that left touchline, he seems less and less confident in himself.
He gets too close to the left touchline, though. He's not exactly the best fullback, is he? So there's a very limited space where he excels in, unfortunately.
Okay, Henry, the next note I've got says James McLean.
Yeah, I mean, it was a red card all day long. I still can't really believe it now. But you knew as soon as the referee didn't send him off straight away, you knew that when he was trying to get the players together to give them a talking to at the same time, you knew that you're going to see two yellow cards and that was going to be it. I was livid, as was everyone else. I mean, it's scandalous. It really is. And what I don't really understand is that, to me, I thought, okay, it's the referee just trying to ignore it and not do anything to kind of really change the game. But then when it came to Cooney, he was straight over with the red card. And I don't know if that is the influence of Wrexham and everything that comes with it. You know, I don't want to be as kind of cynical as to put it like that, but you can't help but feel that there's that kind of aura from those sort of teams that makes the referee make those decisions where he's not going to do something to wind them up too much. I don't know, man. You just can't put your head on someone like that. You just can't do it and not expect a red. It's not okay.
There's a cracking still going around Twitter where you can see McLean. Because at the time, I was screaming, go down. Because if Aaron Rowe goes down, I think he has to send him off because his head's gone in there and the player's gone down. But he couldn't go down because McLean had the presence of mind to make sure he was hugging him at the time. So he couldn't go down. So he's hugged him and then shoved his head in quite forcefully. It's a red card. Aaron Rowe knew exactly what he was doing. Was it a late tackle? Yes. Should Aaron Rowe have been booked? Absolutely. He played for the reaction. He got the reaction. Now, referee, do your job and send him off.
Yeah.
As soon as he got away with it, everyone was like, oh, he's on a yellow card. I was like, it doesn't matter. We're in the 45th minute. He won't come out for the second half. Bill Parkinson's a shit manager, but he's not an idiot. There is no way that James McLean was going to see the second half. So, it was infuriating. And everyone was sort of incandescent with rage. But it was fitting of the ref's performance. He wanted the limelight. He knows there's a Disney documentary. He's going to give a couple of decisions in Wrexham's favour and he's going to have his name up in lights. Awful ref. Hopeless.
That's polite, Alex.
Yeah.
There's a few choice words we could come with. He was the big decisions he got wrong. Simple as that. And if he's influenced by, you know, the outside, he shouldn't be refereeing. He should referee the game as a game. Don't matter where he's refereeing, kids football, adults football, referee the game, and that's all you've got to do.
And just on the James McLean point, I saw, I don't know if anyone's seen the film In Bruges. I think we might have done. There's a scene in there with, well, it's Brendan Gleeson, the actor, and I think it's Ralph Fiennes. And Brendan Gleeson was describing Ralph Fiennes' character, and it involved a C word, and it was a little monologue. And I think you could swap out Ralph Fiennes and you could put in James McLean, and it would be quite accurate.
Can I just ask, just to be flippant for a second, what's going to happen when James McLean's son breaks into the first team at Crites?
I've got nothing against James McLean in any way, shape or form, because that's who he is. And if it's up to the referees to deal with it, simple as that. He loves it. He feeds off it. And if the referees aren't going to do the job, he'll carry on doing it. Aaron Rowe, as Alex said, did exactly what wound him up. Right, he's going now. No. And they couldn't wait to get him off the pitch. They were going to sub him just before he took the free kick.
That free kick does lead straight to the second goal. And I agree. James McLean knows exactly what he's doing when he's hugging Aaron Rowe and stopping him going down. I would argue Paul Mullin did to Ryan Cooney what he does 90% of the time the ball comes next to him. He gives the defender a little nudge. He might get called for a foul 2 out of 10 times, but 8 out of 10 times he gets away with it. And Ollie Palmer knows exactly what he's doing when he goes up for that flick on for the second goal. They did it in the home game. I'm sure they've been doing it to teams in League Two all season. They are a Phil Parkinson team. They've got all this money. You know, we all saw the figures this week that they spent £300,000, which is ludicrous, on agent fees in this year in League Two. So they've got all the money to build the team with all the players, but they still play rough and tumble, long ball, elbow the defender out of the way, put the ball in the net with two very good strikers. And that's essentially Paul Mullin's goal for Wrexham, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree, Henry.
Yeah, I do. I think it's kind of, yeah, it's an accumulation of everything that we've discussed in terms of dark arts, isn't it? You know, from one end of the pitch, the not getting a red card for McLean, and then before you know it, it's in the back of our net, and you know, there's a centre back who's had an elbow in his face along the way. So my issue would be is that we have to be better still. We have to be better. We have to be awake to the situation. You know, there's all this chaos being caused by the headbutt, and you have to still, you know, switch on. As difficult as that is in those situations, you have to be alive to it. And clearly those players for Wrexham are, you know, what the best in the league at doing that, really. It's still a fantastic finish, by the way. It's a really good lob. But, yeah, it's disappointing because, you know, we have to deal with these balls over the top better. Yeah, there might be a foul in there, but we have to be better. The centre-backs, like I said before, were, you know, all at sea, really, for a lot of yesterday, and have been, you know, for weeks. We couldn't see goals from out wide, balls into the box far too easily. You know, it happens way too much, and it's happened too much in the home games. You know, it was a disappointing one to concede, and you knew, didn't you, really, that, like, bang on half time, a second goal goes in, McLean's still on the pitch. Like Alex said, you know, he's going to get subbed off. You know, that's not going to be an issue come the second half, and it felt like the game had got away from us at that point, to be honest.
It was a foul on Mickey, as far as I'm concerned. But Zach has switched off expecting the foul to be and allowed Mullin to run off him. He's just got to track the runner there. Like, as soon as that free kick, it's not like you're going to step and play him offside. You just track the run. Now, Mickey, I don't know if it's got distracted because of what happened to Mickey and expecting the whistle to blow, but just track the runner and get goal side, and you don't have that problem. I mean, Mickey probably didn't make enough of it, but it was... His arm was so far out. It wasn't like they were competing together. He straight armed him straight in the neck. It might not have been hard, but it was enough that there was contact and it was foul as far as I'm concerned. Now, I was at the game. It might have looked different from the back of the main stand. I don't know on the eye follow if it looked that bad, Stu. But I don't see how the ref is looking straight at Matt. And especially as he should have sent off McLean 30 seconds earlier, just level it up to an extent. Just give a decision our way. It's like he was like, no, I don't want to give anything against Wrexham. It just felt like that.
Yeah, out of all the big decisions yesterday, to answer your question, Alex, for anyone watching at home, on iFollow. I thought that one was the least I had an issue with. I saw Mickey go down, and I watched it again this morning before we recorded, and it doesn't really clearly show a big issue. Like, maybe, but I think the McLean and the Cooney ones were much bigger problems or wrong decisions, I think, than that one.
I agree with that. Still think it's a foul.
Yeah, I agree with Alex. It was a foul all day long. But then again, Zach Williams has just been booked in the Aaron Rowe incident. So that's in his head. Oh, I can't foul here. Because what he should do with Mullen, when the ball goes, just lean into him. You know, stop him winning the ball.
You know what happened, though? He leans into him, ref gives a free kick and sends Zach off.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And that's what he's probably thinking in his head. Well, that killed the game, didn't it, the second goal? Because A, they won. They might have had the free kick, but it just changes the game completely, the sending off, the non-sending off. Changes it completely.
I think at 1-0, that gave us a chance, though. I think if we could have come out into, you know, for the second half 1-0 down, I definitely would have given us a chance of at least getting a point. But
yeah, especially with 10 men.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like they had an extra man somehow just because McLean hadn't been sent off. It was just all wrong at that point. I had so much belief in yesterday as well, and you just saw it kind of disappear at that stage. It was very, very
frustrating. I want what you're drinking before the game, Henry. I tell you, if you had belief before yesterday.
Yeah, I'm an eternal optimist, but that, honestly, I mean, you know, it's never really based on anything logical. It's just how I feel on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, having read your part in the Where Will We Finish This Season, I think you were the most optimistic out of, I think, 15 different people. When it goes 2-0, Trevor, I think you are correct in saying that's the game. And I've just had a little look whilst you guys have been talking. The last time Crew scored 2 goals in a game.
Notts County.
Morecambe defeat, start of March. So it's been a while since we scored 2. So at that point, yeah, you're probably right. It is game over. But the referee wants to make absolutely sure of that just after halftime. Henry, maybe the most ludicrous red card I think I've ever seen in 25, 30 years of watching the Alex.
Honestly, yeah. It's fine. Like he's kind of caught the ball. It's, you know, he's got pushed into the back. His arms up, fine. Maybe give him a booking, but he couldn't wait to get over there. That's what I was saying about before with the... With the McLean one, you know, I thought, right, he's just trying to ignore the situation. But with that one, he couldn't wait. I really, really do not understand it. In front of all the Wrexham fans as well, that is probably why, let's be fair. You know, it must have felt class for him to get that reaction from all those people behind him. So maybe that's why it was. And you knew, didn't you? That was it. It's game over. Cooney was losing his head, and he was kind of looking over to the touchline and appealing to someone. I don't really know what he was trying to do at that point, but I felt for him. He'd been absolutely done. And they were trying to wind him up, you know, at the end of the first half as well. I think they kind of realised that he was someone that they could kind of prey on, and clearly it worked.
Yeah, bonkers reffing. Yeah. I think you look at decisions. If he'd have given the foul against whichever one of the dickheads it was up front, I don't even care anymore. Mullin, if he'd have given the foul against him, he'd have thrown his hands up in the end, he'd have got a bit of reaction. But no one would be talking about that decision in the aftermath. They're not going to go, oh, do you remember when Mullin pushed Cooney on the halfway line when we were 2-0 up, 50 minutes gone, and he didn't give that free kick? And he gave that free kick. No one would have talked about it. The ref made it a talking point by sending off Cooney. He's clearly nudged. Now, when you're going up for the ball and you get a slight nudge like that, it knocks you off balance. It's a foul all day long. I have no idea why the ref didn't give it. To then send him off is another thing. Now, has he been sent off for denying a clear goal scoring opportunity? Has he been sent off for deliberate handball? God knows. If it's denying a clear goal scoring opportunity, it's a 1-game ban. Plus, I think he got sent off earlier in the season, so it'll be a 2-game ban. If it's a deliberate handball, I think that's the end of Ryan Cooney's season. But I just don't, I don't understand the logic of just turning that into a red card. Just use your common sense as how you ref the game. If it's a defining moment, if it's something like that, then fine, I can get why you've made the decision as it was. But to then change, to kill the game through that decision was ludicrous refereeing.
We go back to the crowd at 9,000. There wasn't one person in that crowd that thought that was a red card. Not one person. There's no way on earth you can send somebody off for that. If it's a goal-scoring opportunity, you've got to have the ball. It was 5 yards inside their half. There's no way he's going to score from there, whether he gets the ball or not. It's just unreal. Like Alex said, it was a push on Cooney. It's caught by Palace. It's hit his hand. If he's going to give a free kick for handball, give a free kick for handball. Not even a booking. Anyway, shape or form. And then to give him a red card is just, it's crackers. As Stu said, I've never seen a red card as bad as that, ever.
Yeah, and at that point, I mean, that is game over. That's it, you know. We can all go home and we can all turn the telly off wherever we're watching. Like, there's no way that the crew team that are playing the way it is with the injuries that we've got, with the suspensions that we've got building, are coming back into that game. And Henry, when it does become 3-0, it's not really a shock. It's not really a surprise. But again, so, so avoidable.
Yeah. Another ball into the box, not dealt with. And there it is. It's just back in the back of the net before you know it. I don't understand what's going on there. It's the only thing is that we can point towards is the lack of Luke Coffin, isn't it? That we keep talking about it. It's said over and over again on this podcast. The lack of Luke Coffin in that team has killed us. It really, really has. And I think that also affects the passing as well. The passing in the team is off. And, you know, Luke Coffin is someone that can control the ball from the defence, and he can marshal the team and he can get balls forward. But also, you know, he's someone that is helping keep the ball out of the back of the net. And we just can't defend at the moment. I was worried at that point, to be honest, that it was still very, very early in the game. And, you know, they made it 3-0 and it looked like we could have got absolutely battered. And perhaps if this game was last week and Wrexham needed the win to secure promotion, you know, they could have gone on and really, really whacked us, you know. Like, I think Mullin came off. He looks pretty fuming about it because I felt that he probably could have got a hat-trick, couldn't he, really, if he'd stayed on. Because, I think about 55 minutes, wasn't it, really, or 60 minutes, you know. It felt a long, long way to full-time. Not good at all.
I think we have missed, obviously we have missed Offord, but if you look, he got injured against the Harrogate game. A week later, we played Notts County, played him off the park, had a game plan, worked down to a tee. For 60 minutes against Morecambe, we were really good. I think what has killed us more is Josse Osterfield has lost all confidence and form in the space of 6 weeks. Connor Thomas, can't keep on the pitch for more than 2 weeks on the trot. And it's just coupled that losing Offord in the midfield is we've not had that protection of the back four. I don't know what you do with Osterfield. I mean, I actually think with Cooney now being suspended, I would get Osterfield out of midfield, and I think he could do a job for us at right wing back. I think he's got a good engine. He's strong in the tackle. He's good in the air. He can strike a ball. He just can't pass to a teammate, and he can't offer us that protection in midfield. And if you're off playing him at right wing back, you've got the protection of the third centre half. Get up and down that flank, offer us that outlet. I would be looking at getting him in there. And I don't think we've got the players fit enough to not have him in the starting 11. That's the problem. But he looks bereft of confidence, the lad. And you do feel sorry for him. But I don't know what else we can do, because his physical attributes probably what keep him in the team at the moment. And we need it in the team, because if you take Osterfield out of that team, and let's say, I mean, I don't even know who you put in for him. Let's say you took Osterfield out, move Billington into midfield and went to a back and then, say, put Kirk in, you lose that physicality. Your physicality comes through one player in Mickey Dimitri. You've got Mattis, Billington and Olicek and Tabner in midfield. You've got Rowe, Kirk and Nevitt up front. You then got a right back, it would have been Cooney. You've just got no physicality. So I don't think in League Two it's sustainable. So that's why he keeps on getting rolled out. But I just think you've got to put him in a position where ultimately we're going to utilise his physical assets as much as possible. And I think a wing-back role or that type of role is probably the only way we can do that at the moment.
We're missing an older head, aren't we? Like a centre midfielder warrior who's just going to get stuck in these games. You know, like a Paul Green sort of player. We're missing that badly at the moment. You're right about Osterfield. He was kind of that player a few weeks ago. I mean, against Stockport, he was fantastic, wasn't he? But I don't really know what he's providing at the moment, and the lack of physicality is huge. But you know, the academy players that we're bringing through are so slight, aren't they? It's the same with Finney. You know, he comes off the bench and he just looks so lightweight. He can't compete with, you know, with these bigger players.
It's interesting. Ed Turns was there yesterday, and by all accounts, it wasn't that bad an injury. So I don't know how far he's away, but if he's fit, he plays for me. He's, yeah, you know, because he is aggressive. He would have to come in the team.
Person listening who wouldn't disagree, or who would disagree with you there, Trevor. I don't think there's a single Crew fan that wouldn't scream for Ed Turns to be back in this team.
And I'd also argue that he's probably benefited from a couple of weeks out of the side, because his form was beginning to taper as well. Take him out. He's come out because of injury, bit of breathing space, back in. It might clear his head, and we'll find, we'll get Ed Turns back to the form that he was in when he signed for us. So I'd be all for getting Ed Turns back in. He's just got to learn when not to compete for the ball, because he was jumping up against 6'4" strikers who've got 3 inches on him, not winning headers, and he was ended up being out of the game. He just needs to learn when to drop off, and then there'd be no problems with Turns.
Even down to Baker Richardson, you know, we're missing his presence in the box when balls are coming in from set pieces. Obviously, he's a striker. We're missing his goals as well. But, you know, there were times you did feel more confident in the second half of matches when Baker Richardson was on the pitch, balls were getting lumped into the box, he was able to clear it out. We're missing all those sorts of players at the moment. And, you know, we just look so porous, don't we? Goals are just coming from everywhere. And what I don't understand as well is that the front line isn't that different to, you know, what we had earlier in the season. I just, like, how are we just not scoring at all? We're barely making chances. I can't understand. Is it just as simple as we don't have a creative midfielder, so we're not feeding the strikers properly? Because I can't see where we're getting a goal from at this rate.
It's a real worry. Away from home, we set up not to concede. And at home, we think we have to go out and win a game. Sometimes, you know, just do what you're good at the time with what you've got and go for a 0-0 at home. But we've not been able to do that. Other teams have scored within the first 20 minutes and we're out of the game because we can't, like I say, we haven't been able to sustain attacks. Apart from when we played Morecambe away, when the wind opened us a little bit in the second half and we were camped out in their half of the field most of the second half. Other than that, it's been digging in away from home. And maybe we should have done it at home in these last three games, because we don't look at home as if we can score, and we ship bagfuls.
I think we tried that yesterday, to be honest, but I don't think you can turn up at home against Forest Green and Grimsby and start for a 0-0, especially where we were after the Forest Green game. We got the result at Gillingham on Good Friday. They had to go and try and win that game. And unfortunately, Bell, I don't know, had an episode over the weekend and thought, right, we'll pick five wingers. That'll work. To get the goals, which, would you believe it, backfired spectacularly. So there was no desire to set up for a 0-0 that day, but there shouldn't have been, in his defence, but it just shouldn't have picked that team. So I don't know where you go from here. You're right, goals aren't coming at home. 0-0 is the best we can hope for. But on away from home, we have looked like scoring. Even at Accrington, I know we didn't create much, but you felt like a goal could have come. Yesterday, after the first 25 minutes, I was like, we're not scoring today.
Nobody goes beyond the centre-forward, Alex, do they? Nevitt's there, but nobody's running beyond him.
Osterfield did that for the first 20 minutes, and that's why we probably had a bit of success, and it allowed Rowe to have a bit of space so he could do a bit of trickery. And Rowe did start the game well, and then it just sort of tailed off, as did everyone, to be honest. The first goal just sucked the life out of them.
Mm, yeah, you're right.
There's two people I want to talk about before we put this game to bed and move on. I think, Henry, now's probably a good time to talk about Charlie Kirk. He came on for 2 minutes yesterday, half cleared a ball, jogged after it and lost it and set up another Wrexham attack. I've been quite defensive of Charlie Kirk and said, you know, he's not going to bomb into tackles. He's, you know, someone that's going to create chances and all of this stuff. Give him time to get fit. I think I'm now on the other side of the fence that it's just not worked out. It's not been a good move for anybody, this one.
No, it hasn't. It really hasn't. I sit down for every home game and I say to the guy next to me, today's the day. Kurt's going to score the winner and we're going to get that moment that we've all been waiting for. And it doesn't look as well. It's just looked further and further away every single game. I felt that, I don't know what you lads thought, but I thought maybe at half time, with it being in the position that we were in, we had nothing to lose. Why not bring those three attackers on that were on the bench? Go 4-3-3 and see what happens. See if we can create something. But yeah, to not want to use Kirk really at all in the match is worrying, isn't it? And I don't really know where we go from here. You know, you don't look at him now as someone that's kind of gonna save our season in terms of finding some form and taking us into the playoffs and being someone that we can genuinely rely on to score for us or even create assists for us. You know, it's a big shame. It really is, because at the time when he signed, we were on a high, weren't we? You know, we'd had some really good results at the turn of the year. Kirk came in, we then went and beat Stockport, and everything felt like it was all building up for a really, really good run at the autos, to be honest. But him not clicking into gear and catching fire has really affected us, to be honest.
He's threatened in spells. I mean, I remember Harrogate, he nearly got that late winner. I thought he was good at Notts County away. Morecambe, he looked really creative. Then it tailed off for a few weeks. And then actually, the Forest Green second half, anything good that we did came through Charlie Kirk. He put one on a plate for Nevitt, which I think was just after, probably about the 55th minute, let's say. Nevitt should score. Nevitt scores 3-1. They were crumbling at 3-0. I think it all could have fallen down around them at 3-1. He then had that fantastic volley, which was incredibly unlucky. And then he's got injured, which has just stalled all his progress. But you're right. If you look at it in isolation, there's been flickers, but there's not been nowhere near enough. But with where we're at, do you pick him next week? Because you know he has got quality, and it's not like we've got an abundance of it in the side at the moment.
Well, going back to the Forest Green game, he had that spell where I thought everything was coming through him. You're correct, Alex. And then he made a tackle, and then he got subbed. And he's hardly featured since. He was injured for the... What game was it?
Accrington.
Came back for Morecambe, got a few minutes. And then he's been on the bench. As Henry said, I'd have thrown Tracy Long and Kirk on second half. I'd have had Nevitt off at 2-0. Game's gone, give him a rest. Don't see the point of playing him that long. That lad needs a rest. Just play them three. Say to Mickey and them, just get it over the top and we'll chase it. Something different. I'd have definitely gone with that. And Charlie Finney came on before Kirk says it all, that the management don't trust him for whatever reason.
The other person I want to talk about, Alex, the goalkeeper, gave him a bit of a free pass last week because, he probably didn't even know the defenders' names in front of him for the Grimsby 3-0 defeat. 3-0 again, so 2 games, 6 conceded. Are we putting the blame at him, or is this just how the team is playing at the moment?
I thought he was fine yesterday. He made a brilliant stop at the start of the second half as well. I think he was off Lee, where he bent it round and he had the presence. He read the shot and then tipped it round the post with a strong hand. I don't think the goalkeeper will be a problem at all. Obviously, there was a big mistake for the Grimsby first goal. But he's looked fine apart from that. He's a big presence as well, which I quite like. And I think we need, with our lack of presence defending set pieces, having a big goalkeeper will help. And the other reason I don't mind him is he's not Harvey Davis, put simply. So that's good enough for me.
All right. I think that will do us for that game. We can all move on and forget about that now. Next, we will have a look at what's coming up on Saturday in probably the biggest game of the season for the club. Okay, Trevor, obviously with the early kickoff on Saturday, it meant 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, all Crewe fans could sit and watch Soccer Saturday or whatever it is nowadays. And for about 80 minutes, it all looked like it was going well. And then that last 10 minutes, it's all turned around and now Crewe need to go to Colchester and get something to make certain.
Yeah, I was just hoping Sutton could win, to be fair, and then Crawley get one in injury time and it all changed. I did swear at that point, but that's the way it goes. Yeah, the Doncaster comeback didn't surprise me because I'm not sure Barrow were in any better form than us, probably in worse form than us, to be honest. So that didn't surprise me, but I thought we could go there in the playoffs and then to give these players an extra week to recover. Now you've got to play them. If it's if they can play with a niggle this Saturday, they've got to play with a niggle end off.
Henry, it really is now, as far as I can see anyway, this is playoff football from Saturday, you know, and we're in it until we're not. If we get the draw, then we go on to the next one, then we've got two legs and then the final. It shouldn't have come to this, the way the season started and progressed, but the last few months, if I'm honest, I don't really think we can blame anyone but ourselves for where we find ourselves. You know, March and April have been awful.
Yeah, well, yeah, you've said it spot on there. I mean, we've been dreadful. You can't get away from it. You know, we've just been beaten 3-0 three times at home. That's terrible, terrible form. There's no getting over how bad that is. But I'm feel like we're fortunate that we only need a point. The way it's been, we've been that bad. I think it's okay that we only need a draw. You know, and I suppose. Is there a chance that even before that, with other results going our way, that we could be okay anyway, or is it
we can't be in the playoffs ahead of Saturday's game. We might not win on Saturday and could still be in the playoffs.
Yeah,
but how results have fallen, the playoffs cannot be mathematically assured until after the whistle next Saturday.
I think
I've looked at all the permutations.
It's lucky Rapid that City. Colchester have played Doncaster, isn't it, on Tuesday night. I think that kind of helps us in some weird way because they either take points off them and kind of then are safe themselves. And obviously then Doncaster losing points, that also helps us as well. So there is something in that, isn't there? But yeah, we've got really lucky that all these teams are playing each other, you know, below us, like Barrow and Crawley and Doncaster all coming up against each other. Has helped us out massively, I think, because without that right now, we'd be in a bad position. We really would.
I was looking at it this morning. Bradford City can still get in the playoffs. Not at our expense, but they can still get in the playoffs. So they're going to Barrow with something to play for. But on the last day, Barrow have got Mansfield on the beach. That'll be enough for them. Doncaster play Colchester.
On Tuesday they play Colchester. Yeah, they play Colchester. Gillingham last game of the season. Doncaster who've got
nothing to play for.
But that's because Gillingham have got nothing to play for because Mansfield, who were on the beach yesterday, scored twice in the last 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Yeah.
So I actually, you know, looking at that in isolation, well, Mansfield are still clearly playing. They obviously want second spot ahead of Wrexham. And I do think they do want that. I think they'd love to stick two fingers up to Wrexham and say we finished above you. So I'm not necessarily sure. I agree with the Mansfield will be on the beach comment, especially based on, you know, they're one down with 10 minutes to go against Gillingham. If Gillingham had won yesterday, they'd still be in the playoff shake-up. So the fact that Mansfield scored those two late goals to turn it around made me think, well, actually, they're not on the beach and they are going to give it a go, which could play into our hands. Look, I'm not... We just need to do our job next Saturday. And Colchester need a point. If they don't beat Doncaster on Tuesday, they need a point to stay up mathematically. Can we not just agree on it before kickoff? Belly, just nip into the Cowley's room. Let's just pass it round each other around the centre circle. No yellow cards, no nothing. Let's all get our points. 0-0. Let's go home. Everyone wins.
That's the perfect scenario, Alex. That's exactly what I'd be doing.
And why wouldn't they? I know it's a bit match fixing and stuff like that, but there's nothing stopping you from doing that.
No, I've seen it done.
Yeah. If this was a Venezuelan Premier League, I guarantee you this would be a 0-0 draw.
There is nothing to stop you other than the laws of football and the possibility of being thrown out of the playoffs as a consequence. But, you know, it is a really big game. We are on a terrible run of form. Colchester do possibly need something out of the game to keep themselves up. Henry, how do you see it going on Saturday?
I mean, I think I weirdly just think we're going to sneak a 1-0 win. I don't know why. I just do. I can just see, you know, same against Morecambe, that kind of result where we just managed to battle through, and then about the 70th minute, Nevitt just, you know, finds a way. I feel like it'll just be one of those games. Same against Sutton. We look dreadful. It's a horrible match to watch, but we just managed to get through and win 1-0. So yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Our record at Colchester is not great, is it, Alex?
No. Neither's my record, personally.
No, I was going to bring that up.
That's a story for another day.
Yeah. So, I think you just go for it. You know, people say, oh, I won't go Colchester, save me money for the playoffs. You might not get that chance. So I'll
I'm pleased it's away from home. I think the game plan away from home, it suits us more. Yeah. So my concern is, what, we get 3 clean sheets on the bounce away from home?
Yep.
It's Kerr Alexandria. We don't keep 4 clean sheets away from home in a row, which means we're gonna have to score a goal.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking, where's it coming from?
CBR.
Well, yeah, I think you wheel him out. I think Connor Thomas, you're going to get wheeled out. And I think you just got to do it. You can't not. The Baker Richardson one's infuriating because he's dislocated his shoulder and we've got lucky. Because dislocating your shoulder is fine if you damage your ligaments. And usually when you dislocate it, where it gets located to damages ligaments. But it didn't. So it's 3 weeks. Set it back in. Let it set. Away you go. And then he goes and does a calf. But what is going on with the strength and conditioning at this football club with the amount of muscle injuries we're happening? It's ludicrous. So, yeah, but I think get him out. Thomas, hopefully get Connor Thomas back. Hopefully get Ed Turns back. Wheel them all out. Hopefully they can just cobble together enough of a performance that we shit out the point. And then we've got the joys of a playoff somewhere. Who we're going to play and where. God knows. I mean, if we somehow end up playing Barrow, you'd fancy us, wouldn't you? Against them, they're in worse form than us, and I don't think they're a particularly good team anyway. Even when they were playing well, but if you get a Doncaster who are flying, if we end up seventh and get MK Dons, you know, it's just don't embarrass yourselves on national television, lads.
Barrow's the only one I would fancy, definitely, definitely. You don't want to play the form teams at all. MK Dons, yeah, they would, I feel like they would pretty comprehensively beat us over 2 legs. So I'd happily take Barrow, but they look like the ones that are going to get sacrificed at this rate. That their form, and they just seem like, you know, they're in a bad spot at the moment.
Doncaster have won 9 on the trot.
Yeah.
That they can't go. They've got to win their last. Are they going to win 2 more? They're going to win 11 on the trot. That doesn't happen at this level. Does not happen. I just, yeah. Hopefully Colchester get the points so they're safe. They're then on the beach and then Doncaster end up slipping up at Gillingham away and somehow bottle the playoffs. Yeah. That would be very funny, winning 9 on the trot and not getting in the playoffs, by the way. I would kill myself with laughter.
Barrow Bradford's a really big game now.
Yeah.
Really huge. Huge game. So I'll be glued to that, I suppose, Tuesday night.
I'm just going to end this chat, guys, by just sort of talking briefly about 1996, 1997. Crewe's penultimate game of the season, they lost at home to Chesterfield 2-1. The last game of the season, they went to York needing a point to be certain of making the playoffs. They got a point. They got into the playoffs. They beat Luton in 2 legs. We all went to Wembley and we all know what happened next. So I'm just saying, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does echo. That's what I'm going to say.
Hello, here he is, by the way. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does echo. God, blimey, Mr. Philosopher over here.
That was Mr. Savage's last appearance.
Oh, we don't need to talk about that idiot. We've had enough idiots talking about on this podcast, Trevor. Okay, I'm going to say we're going to do it. I'm going to say it's going to be 0-0. It's going to be horrible to watch. It's going to be tense. We're all going to be on our phones looking at scores coming in all throughout the game. 0-0, play Barrow, get to Wembley, and then somehow beat MK Dons. There you go. That's what's going to happen.
Can I have some money on that then? Are you?
I don't gamble.
Fair enough. Can I just say, though, that I was looking at Twitter last night and apparently the Alex haven't got any more coaches going. I find that incredible that there's no supporters. A week before the game, can't get coach down to Colchester.
Surely they'll be putting something on if there's demand.
Well, I just find it, well, apparently not.
Apparently we need as many fans as we can get down there. They're going to need us. They're going to need our support. I think what we've got to try and avoid doing, and I'll be the most guilty of it, is when there's a goal that goes in elsewhere and you're on edge, just make sure that doesn't somehow transfer onto the players so they don't know about it. We need to just make sure we're focused on supporting them and not letting them worry about what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah.
Which is easier said than done.
Yeah. I went to Morecambe and the support there for 90 minutes was terrific. And that's what we need to replicate. We don't usually take a lot to Colchester. Geographically, it's not a great place to go to. It's not cheap. But I would encourage everybody to get down there if they can. Because they're going to need us, as Alex said.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, I'll finish this bit off then by saying I spoke to Simon to get the Colchester perspective on the game. Hi, Simon. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me back again. It's that time of the season.
Yeah, not a problem. So for us, Saturday is going to be a massive game. I, and I think all Crewe fans are hoping that for you guys, for Colchester, by the time Saturday comes around, it's not going to be important for you. Are you confident that's going to be the case, or are you thinking that you're going to need to take something out of Saturday's game?
I'm not too sure, if I'm real honest. I think going into yesterday's game at County, we were all very confident with Crawley playing Sutton that they'd get a win there, and obviously we'd get at least a point up at County. Obviously, it didn't quite go to plan. Doncaster, obviously, are unbeaten in their last nine, so they're going to be a tough nut to crack. Ideally, we get at least a point on Tuesday, and then we can go to the last game of the season just to have a day out, enjoy ourselves, you know, thank the players for their efforts in the last couple of months of staying up, and yeah, just really have a game to enjoy. If, however, Tuesday doesn't go to plan and we do have something to play for, I think it's going to be a very nervy game. We'll see what, we'll just need to point. Or even that, just to keep our goal differences down if we are getting defeated and see what MK can produce at home to Sutton. So ideally, we're all pretty much the same as you guys, that we can go in Saturday with nothing to play for and just enjoy our last home game of the season. Reality, I think it's going to be 50-50 whether or not it actually does happen. And to be fair, I hope for a point Tuesday and just Saturday, just enjoy football for a change.
If it makes you, well, I don't know if it will make you feel any better at all, but you will have all of South Cheshire behind you on Tuesday night as well, because obviously Doncaster winning would have repercussions for us the same way if you get some points, it has repercussions for you and then our game on Saturday. Moving on briefly, because obviously you brought the Cowleys in this year. There's been, I don't know if you'd agree, I would say there's been an upturn in fortune since they've come in. Have you seen enough from them that they're the right people to kick on to not let this happen again next year, that you're into their last week hoping to get points to stay up?
Definitely. To be fair, I go into every season saying this year won't be as bad as last year. I'm pretty sure every football fan does themselves. But no, from what I've seen, I generally do believe this year, if we can just get across the line, give them the summer to attract players they want, have a pre-season, getting everything into the players, how they want them to play, work on the fitness levels they require, etc. I generally do feel next season is going to be much, much better. And even when things haven't maybe gone quite as well when they've been in charge, the fans are all behind them as a team, as a fan base, very collective in support of the Cowleys. And I think we've become much, much harder to beat. We haven't lost by more than one goal under them. Also, we got back-to-back wins under them, which was quite a novelty for us. Well, to be fair, a novelty was a win at my same point in the season. So, yeah, definitely going forward, they are the right people with both on and off the pitch, how they think, how they act, and the players obviously play for them. And I think all the fans would pretty much run for a brick wall for them, the way they come across and the way they talk. So, yeah, we have got high hopes. And I think there's probably going to be more pressure on them next year than there is this year, because they've come into a job that was, obviously, we were playing poorly. It was very much a case of survival. They weren't, that's what we needed from them. Next season, that's when I think everyone expects them to get a Cowley side that will play positive attacking football, get the wins, get the points, and actually see us at the table.
Go back to Saturday. If it was me, if I was in charge, 0-0, no shots from either side. We both get the point we need. What do you think is going to happen in the game on Saturday?
So I think for us, it very much depends on what we need from the game. If we go into Saturday safe, I think you'll see a very attack-minded, free-roaming, flair team who are just there for want to go and enjoy themselves, finish on a high. A few players that maybe on the fringes will look to put performance in to make sure they're in the plans for next year. So that's, from our point of view, best case scenario, if you like. I think if we go into the game needing a point, you could well find out we suddenly field 10 defenders that just sit across our 18-yard box and, don't let anything in. Because obviously we will need the point, and hopefully with you guys, obviously if you need the point as well, we can sort of come to some gentleman's agreement and just kick the ball around the halfway line for the whole game. You give everyone a bit of a rest and a chilled out afternoon.
More than happy with that, Simon. Yeah. Absolutely more than happy. Okay, can I get a score prediction from you?
If we need a point, it'll be 0-0. I've got a feeling if we don't need a point, we can end up going to win about 2-1, 3-1. Which I go, right. I know we're not what you guys want to hear, but...
Simon, I say this with full sincerity. Thank you for your time and all the best on Tuesday night.
Thank you very much.
All right, I've got two things to talk about to finish today. One, quite a nice thing, and then to round out the podcast, start on a negative, end on a negative. We'll get to that in a minute. But to start with the positive, we ran our Player of the Season competition for the podcast this week. Monday to Thursday were the semi-finals, four of the most one-sided semi-finals I think we've ever had since I started running this competition. Set up a final of Rio Adebisi, Mickey Demetriou, Luke Offord and Elliot Nevitt. And the results were Rio in fourth, Offord in third, Nevitt in second, and Mickey with about 65% of the vote, taking the win to become our Player of the Season. Just want to say thank you to everyone that voted over the five competitions that we ran. We had over 3,000 people voting or casting their vote. So really, really phenomenal support. And you know, the more people that vote, the more legitimate it is that I think he is the Player of the Season. So thank you and well done to Mickey. We will be giving him his award as part of the club's event on Tuesday night. So if you're there, keep your eyes out for us, handing him the award. He joins the illustrious list of Owen Dale, Chris Long and Rod McDonald as previous winners of this award. So well done. Lastly then, today, there was quite some big news announced by, let's say, the FA and the Premier League, because it certainly wasn't the EFL that announced it. The FA Cup changes. Trevor, I'll come to you first. What were your thoughts?
Well, as the oldest person on the pod, and who remembers the FA Cup as being the second biggest trophy you could win, or the biggest trophy you could win at one point, the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, it was the competition you wanted to win. Grand day out at Wembley, no other games on the day, the build-up, terrific. Going back lower down the table, you got an home draw against a big club, got a draw, took them to their place. It's what the FA Cup was all about. Now, if them teams in the Premier League don't want replays, don't enter the competition. End of story. It's been devalued. It got devalued when Man United went off and played in the World Cup or whatever. It was some Mickey Mouse trophy that nobody ever takes a bit of interest in. And ever since then, it's gone downhill. The Premier League was formed in 1992. Football was 100 and plus years before that. And they're just messing it around for a few teams at the top. I'm not interested in it.
The argument doesn't stack up when they're saying about, the schedule's killing the players. We don't need replays. When was the last time you can remember Man City playing in a replay? When was the last time you can remember Liverpool playing in a replay? When was the last time you can remember any big side playing in a replay? Oh, it's killing the players. You rotate your squad anyway. When was the last time you saw Haaland roll out in the FA Cup fourth round game? When was the last time you saw Salah play in the fourth round of the FA Cup? They don't play their big players in the game anyway. Keep the replays in. Don't f*** it up for the rest of us. Get back in your lane and get on with it. I mean, I think the biggest opportunity they missed with the FA Cup was as soon as they got the fourth spot for the Champions League, however many years ago that was, probably about 20 years back, because it used to be three. The fourth spot shouldn't have gone to league position. It should have given it to the FA Cup winners. Then all of a sudden, the FA Cup would have retained its value. then everyone would have been interested in it. And you wouldn't have found yourself in this position today. The big clubs would have then said, let's have replays. So we're giving ourselves a second bite of the cherry to do it. They'd have done everything to protect it. But it's all self-served interest from the top. Football is being run for the 1% nowadays. It's doing my head in. As far as I'm concerned, top six, piss off, get lost, go play in your Super League that no one's got any interest in. We'll have the rest of English football. We'll have a different league winner every year, which will make it more interesting rather than City, Liverpool, maybe Arsenal in the next few years. Different winners. It'll be more interesting. You've got a chance to win the FA Cup. Let's have it. The big six want their money. Go have your cake. Go eat it. Go get your food poisoning. We're done with you.
Exactly, Alex. Spot on.
I mean, couldn't that's essentially my argument as well, Alex. I've got quite a few friends who are not Crewe fans, surprisingly. I've got one friend in particular who I'm thinking of. If you're below, let's say, the top five, six in the Premier League, you may as well not exist in his world. Like, that's essentially who he is. And he sent a message saying, well, it's pretty much a good thing. You know,
your friends are cretin.
Only the people who are struggling financially or non-league want replays. And I was like, we're all struggling financially. Every club in the EFL is chasing a dream. If you're in the Championship, you're overextending yourself to get into the Premier League. If you're in League Two, Crewe are run as well as they can be, and we're still struggling as a club financially. I'm the same as you. I've reached a point now where I don't care how destructive it is to the format of English football. I want them gone. If the Super League comes back again, go away, please. Like, enjoy your TV money. Enjoy. And the problem is, and this is the big problem that we have as Crewe fans, on Saturday, there was 9,000 fans in the stadium. And that's our biggest crowd, I think Trevor said, since 2005. 9,000 fans is a drop in the ocean to the Premier League clubs. They could not care less about us. We are so insignificant. We don't exist. I just want them gone. I want them to take the millions of people that want to watch Manchester City versus Juventus on an eternal loop on television for the rest of their life to enjoy that and just leave football for us. Let us have the proper competition. You go off and enjoy. Essentially, it's like wrestling. It's sports entertainment. It's not real sport. They don't want real sport. They want it like America, a closed shop, 20 teams at the top that don't get in, that don't get changed. And they're the ones that are making money. And they want us to go away, because 9,000 fans at a Crewe is massive for a town the size of Crewe on a global scale, which is what English football is now operating on. It doesn't matter. And I just want them to go away. I've stopped watching the Premier League. I stopped watching the Premier League about 4 years ago. It doesn't interest me anymore. It's just all about money. It's not about football anymore.
Sport is about jeopardy. That's what makes it what it is. The closed shop does not have that jeopardy that's going to make it enjoyable. What's the repercussions for losing a game if you're in the Super League? Like yesterday, we're now talking about all the permutations. They go away because what does it matter? There's no jeopardy in it with how they want the sport to be run. I mean, it's a total mess. Rick Parry has been former Premier League chair. He's now chair of the EFL. His head's still in his old role. He's serving the interests of the many of the few, when he should be looking after the many. So I want him gone. I want someone who's going to have a backbone, because his predecessor, Sean Harvey, has obviously gone to Wrexham, who very tellingly have not released a statement condemning the FA Cup. Says all you need to know about his predecessor as well. They need to really just get someone in there who's going to ruffle a few feathers and say, actually, just call the Premier League bluff, because they're absolutely paralysed with fear that they'll lose the Premier League money. And that is what is dictating things. The FA should hang their heads in shame. The creation of the Premier League has created untold wealth. Unfortunately, it stayed at the top. And the FA have got this golden share vote in the Premier League. That's how it was created. And they've done nothing to protect football in this country. So they're a disgrace as well. What comes next? What's next once the FA Cups are gone? Once FA Cup replays go, they'll get rid of the FA Cup. Probably. They'll say there's no interest in the big teams. We're not getting the audience anymore. We're going to knock it on the head.
What they want, they don't, as you say, they don't want promotion and relegation from the AFL to the Premier League. they vote that in tomorrow if they could get away with it. But as Alex said, jeopardy is what you want. Since we've had two down out the Football League into the conference has made it a lot better. The playoffs have kept the game going for longer. But to, if there was a vote tomorrow by the Premier League to end relegation, they would vote for it like that. That's what they want.
And do you know what's really annoyed me in all of this as well? Some clubs who've forgotten where they've come from. Brentford is a prime example.
Brighton would be mine, Alex. Sorry to cut you off.
Bournemouth.
But I remember Brentford 20 years ago, with £7 million in debt. We relegated them at Gresty Road on Easter Monday to League Two. They're now in the Premier League and they've got their manager kind of saying, oh, it's good for the players that we don't have this. You don't even play that many games. You're a shit Premier League club. You play 38 league games and you might have a couple in the cup. Get on with it, you twat. Thomas Frank can go to hell. Brighton can go to hell. Bournemouth can go to hell. They're the ones that have really annoyed me. Because there's argument for City that they play in every competition. They go deep in every competition. They do have a lot of games. But it's these clubs that play 38 games that kick off. Go to hell.
To change the rules, I think you need 14 of 20. There's some clubs in the Premier League who are now voting with the big clubs' wishes because they want to do the same. Brighton are the ones. They come across very, very nice because, you know, Brighton's a lovely town full of lovely people. But they are consistently voting with the big clubs. Henry, you're probably too young to remember this. In the 1990s, there were buckets outside every EFL ground to save Brighton. At Gresty Road, we had buckets to save Brighton as a club. That's how bad it was. And they've just forgotten this. And the idea that the good times last forever is so, so ludicrous. Nothing lasts forever. You will be back down. And if you change the system now, it's only going to make it worse when you get back down there yourself later, which will happen. Brighton are not staying in the Premier League from now until eternity. That's not going to happen. The other thing, the last thing I want to go back to is sort of full circle on what Alex started with in games. I saw a statistic. Now, we're recording this before Man United play Coventry in the FA Cup semi-final. If Man United win that game, I think they will have played or will play 52 games this season. Grimsby Town, third, fourth, bottom of the league, 53 games this season. So the idea that they're playing too many games with the squad that they've got is another thing that just falls completely flat on its face when you really like dig into it and look at it. It's just about money. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. I'm going to stop talking about this because I've wound myself up. But yeah, it's ludicrous. I would say, though, if you want to cheer yourself up, have a little look on Twitter at some of the responses from some of the EFL and the non-league teams. My favourite three, other than Crews, obviously, have all been Northwest clubs. So very well, very proud to say that. Tranmere, I think, were the first. So they should be applauded by being the first to take a stand. Well done to them. Theirs is definitely worth reading. Altrincham's is absolutely worth reading. And Nantwich, on Saturday morning, they put a tweet out saying, we're obliged to put this sign up that says the Premier League supports this. We don't feel much support this week. So well done to those clubs. Well done to our club, Crew, for taking a stand. Any Wrexham fans that have tuned in because you want to hear us talk about the game and you're still with us, you can all go with your owners and your chief executive because you are just as guilty if you don't take a stand. With that, I'm done, guys. So, Henry, Alex, Trevor, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will be back next week to discuss the triumphant 0-0 draw at Colchester. Thank you, as ever, for listening. Until then, goodbye. Bomb, 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 bomb